spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. And folks, we got a treat for you tonight. We're hooking up with Herschel Gurley, a little bit of a stage name, but Herschel Gurley with Saturday in Athens podcast. And we really break down the Georgia Bulldogs. I tell you what, they really know their stuff. All the players, all the inside stories, all the scoop. It's a phenomenal conversation. I think it's probably one of the easier interviews that I've done. I just kick my feet up and just toss out some questions and just listen to them roll because there's so much critical information they have about the team, just so much insight. So it's an incredible, fun listen. It was for me to record and ask questions, and I hope you'll enjoy it. So let's turn it over to the podcast. Go. Hey, welcome back, podcast fans. Have we got a treat for you? We've got Herschel Gurley from Saturday in Athens, the Saturday in Athens podcast. Herschel, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me, brother. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, let's jump in and talk about it. And I always like to start talking a little bit about the coach, sort of set the scene. Take us into, if you will, sort of the mindset of the fan base. We think about last season, maybe during the offseason, there was a lot of articles or a lot of sort of talk about, hey, Kirby's record 4 years in, it kind of looks like a lot like, you know, Mark Richt's record for, you know, 4 years in. What was the mindset of the fan base at that time? Was that just media noise? Was there something to it? And sort of juxtapose that to now where maybe it's a little different, right?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think it would depend which segment of the fan base you talk to. Like most, I think it was probably bifurcated. We talk a lot on our show, and we're probably the wrong ones to ask because we are in the In Kirby We Trust camp. I just think if you have been tuned into the program and watching the program, and I think as sports fans, we all understand the feel we have as fans for things like that. And Kirby's program feels different than Coach Richt's program. It's not right or wrong one way or the other. It's just different. I think if you look at the donor money that's come in since Kirby's been there, the facilities that have come up since Kirby's been there, the recruiting results since Kirby's been there, if you've been a Georgia fan and aren't juiced up about what Kirby and his staff are doing in Athens, either you're not paying attention or you don't want to be happy. I mean, that's been our opinion on it. And, you know, the records look similar, but I think they feel different. So Coach Richt's beginning tenure, he had some electric athletes, early success, early SEC titles, but they were never in, you know, it's different ecosystems too, right? There was no playoff system. So you didn't get to dance in the national championship game. You know, we're second 26 away from having a ring in his second year. And I don't think you can take that out of it and look at it in a vacuum of just analytics and numbers, right? Like that matters. You know, you go into Pasadena and win a historic Rose Bowl against a damn good Oklahoma team. You win an SEC title, which hadn't been done in over a decade. And, you know, the results are there. They play in three straight SEC title games. And also, I think you just evaluate the roster. And as a fan, you look at it and go, like, even if you're at a spring game, you look at the sideline and you go, man, this crew, they look different. Like, and that's noticeable as a fan. You just look, they look almost 50 deep. That they could have guys that go play in the league just from a body composition perspective and how they look when they run and all these things. So, you know, for us, we never questioned it. Now, was there a certain segment of the fan base who was stern about it? Sure. I think there are segments of the Georgia fan base, which I'm sure there are in all fan bases, who have a little bit of a Chicken Little quality about them where it's woe is us and nothing's ever going to go right and all these things. And we just always talk about like, hey, look, the good old days are right now. Like it's a beautiful time to be a Georgia football fan. And if you can't embrace that, then you're never going to be happy. Like it's been awesome. They are nationally relevant. We are one of the top five programs in the country and that's inarguable. So live in that and embrace it, right? Like that's kind of been our message on our show is to feel that way. Now, do I think there would have been some pressure maybe from the outside. I don't think from the media. I think the media saw what was happening, like the real media, the folks who were tuned in, not like the drive-by guys like a Skip Bayless or somebody like that, right? But I think the guys that cover the sport know that the folks in Athens would have to be crazy to ever think Kirby should get off right. the head coaching seat, right? Like, it shouldn't happen. But obviously everything changes when you go 12-0 and set yourself in a position like they are now. And, you know, it's still, as Georgia fans, it's still what's next though, right? There's still right. three games. They still got a three-game season they got to play. And he has a chance to put himself in the echelon with Vince Dooley. So, but we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of football left to be played, a lot of things left to see. But this, I think, has certainly bolstered him even in the most, I think, pessimistic Georgia fans' mind that things are going in the correct direction.
That makes a lot of sense. There's a lot to like with Kirby and what he's done, you know, there at the Georgia program. You know, I like what you said about, you know, recruiting. And you can just look at the team and you could tell it looks different, you know, how they run their athleticism, just, you know, just a bunch of big old boys out there wrecking havoc. Definitely agree with that. Let's talk about the quarterback position. Help me out here to sort of dial in. I'm going to call it the irony meter, right? So help me dial in. Help me sort of triangulate this. We've got quarterback Stetson Bennett, who's storybook to the point Hollywood doesn't believe it. And you know, from walk on, he left the team, he came back, he's piloting Georgia, the number one team in the country. But if you look back in very recent history, that quarterback room has had, you know, Eason, Fromm, Fields, JT Daniels is there now. All of those guys that have come through, highly ranked, accredited guys, and Stetson Bennett leading the way. Sort of how funny does that feel?
Well, I think it's even funnier given last year, right? You know, Stetson was a guy on that 2017 team who was the scout team quarterback and mimicked Baker Mayfield during the Rose Bowl preparation. And even during the Rose Bowl media coverage, defensive coordinator at the time, Mel Tucker, and Butkus Award winner Roquan Smith came out and said, you know, we're like, can't keep up with Stetson Bennett in practice. So he had, I think, some heat from guys inside the program early. I think he kind of showed that he had some potential. But then, you know, like you said, you have a quarterback room that has Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm, and then Eason leaves to go to Washington, and here comes Justin Fields. And if you're a guy like Stetson Bennett, you go, am I ever going to see the field? So he goes the JUCO route and didn't light the world on fire in the JUCO scene. I think he had somewhere in the vicinity of 14 to 16 picks his JUCO season. And he comes out, he had some group of five scholarship offers and was set to take them. And then Georgia swooped in late and offered him a scholarship. And, nice. You know, he's born and raised in Georgia, dream school always to go to Georgia. So he took the offer and came back. I don't think the expectation, I think if he was having an honest conversation with you, was ever that he was going to be the starting guy.
Right.
I think he thought he could be the starting guy, but I don't think that was ever something that was really a reality until everything happened last year. And you talk about a perfect storm. Jamie Newman decides to sit out because of COVID. JT Daniels is not healthy yet from the ACL he was recovering from. They start the season with Dwan Mathis in the Arkansas game. Things were not smooth and did not go well. They bring Stetson in the second half. They put up 30-some points in the second half, and he's off and running. I mean, you guys saw him in Tuscaloosa last year, which I think at the time was – he got exposed. I think he had his worst game, and I don't think mentally he recovered from that. Now I will say this, and we've said this on our show. He started out the cocktail party last year really hot. Yep. And then he partially separated his shoulder in the second drive of the game. And after that point, he wasn't healthy. And then obviously JT Daniels starts the next week against Mississippi State, and that rest of that book is history, right? You know, they go 4-0 and win the Peach Bowl, and JT Daniels is his early season Heisman favorite. And in all honesty, there have been a couple of stories that have come out from Georgia beat writers where he was told by the Georgia coaching staff that he was at least third on their depth chart going into this season.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you have a situation where even this year, before the opener against Clemson, you've got Kirby Smart offensive coordinator Todd Monken saying, hey, look, man, you're not going to be the guy. But I got to give my co-host credit on this. Back in June, we were having a conversation about if JT got hurt, who would step in the Clemson game to take snaps. And he said, I think it would be Stetson because Kirby knows what he has and he will go with that, what he feels comfortable with.
Right.
And damn if he wasn't right on the money. JT gets dinged up with the I think it started with a lat. I can't remember if it started with a lat or which it was. One of these back injuries, oblique is what it started with. Yeah, it was a baseball injury. It's what I think of. And couldn't play. Stetson starts game two against UAB, lights it up, 5 touchdown passes in the first half, which only one other quarterback in Georgia history has done, which is Aaron Murray, which is pretty good company. And I think, too, his mobility, Todd Monken likes that. Yep. And I think whether they'd say it or not, they're always thinking about bigger opponents, like in Alabama, like in Ohio State before they dropped the ball last weekend. But these right. bigger programs where, hey, look, if we get stuck and we can't run the football, what are we going to do at the quarterback position to give ourselves an edge? Yeah. And I think his mobility has really allowed that. And I do think he's grown. I think he is less of a gunslinger this year than he was last year. I think you guys saw that in Tuscaloosa, that he would make some throws that he should have eaten or thrown in the first row. And he's been better about that. Now, we'll see how things go Saturday. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, Hollywood story for sure. Right. I think the thing about Stetson that separates him apart, and it's not quantifiable, I think it's the gravitas. I think it's that guys believe in him. And you can't put a number around that. There's no quarterback rating that's right. on that. But multiple guys have come out unprompted and made statements that they'll play for Stetson Bennett.
Nice.
And, you know, I think that says a lot in and of itself. It's not to say they wouldn't play for JT. I think the guys love JT too, but it's just different. Yeah. And so I think they're rolling with it.
Makes sense. Hey, let's talk about some of these pass receivers. I think that sort of that irony meter sort of plays a role here too, right? You've got tight end sort of Brock Bowers leading the way over Darnell Washington and Eric Gilbert. There's been, you know, some of the guys, there's a lot of things going on maybe with the Georgia receiver group, and you can sort of unpack that for us. But I think Brock is not someone you would pick over Darnell or Eric necessarily. And a wide receiver, Ladd McConkey. I know Pickens was injured, but you've got guys that maybe looking at the roster back over the summer, you wouldn't have forecasted to be your leading receivers. But there they are leading the way, right?
Yeah, so sometimes the necessity is the mother of invention, right? And I think in a lot of ways that's been the Georgia receiver room this year. You know, we've talked a lot about this on our show. If you had told us back on August 1st that, or even back in June, that George Pickens would miss the entire season with injury, that Kyaris Jackson would play half the games because of an injury, that Jermaine Burton wouldn't be healthy till halfway through the season, that Arik Gilbert wouldn't be on the roster because he's dealing with personal issues, and we're going to be 12-0, we would have told you were crazy.
Right.
And, you know, in all honesty, Darnell didn't really play until week 6. So you have all these guys who are supposed to be your locked-in key contributors, and none of them are playing. Brock Bowers has just been a revelation. I mean, kid from Napa, California, came in early. Coaches were raving about him. We thought something might be up when in, I guess, second or third week of fall practice, Coach Monken had a press conference or had media availability and talked about how diverse he was and said he was an F-back, meaning, you know, he wasn't a traditional H, wasn't a traditional tight end. He right. kind of was a do-all type guy. And, hey, you might even see him carry the football like a running back. And that happened. He had a rushing touchdown against Vanderbilt. So I think when – If you're tuned into your own program, like you guys are with Alabama, you kind of know when one of the guys says something, right. you go, wait a minute. That kind of makes your ears perk up a little bit. And so when Coach Monken said that, we kind of thought, well, maybe this kid's going to be something, right? And so we didn't know he was going to be this. But when we were in Charlotte for the Clemson game and they targeted him like 8 times game one, we thought, well, they must like this kid. And I'll tell you, the biggest revelation with him is speed. I mean, you look at the play against Georgia Tech on Saturday where he splits the entire defense and goes 70-some yards. I mean, just afterburners. And you pair that with a Darnell Washington, who is just a super freak. I mean, for somebody to be that tall and weigh that much and be able to run the way he does with those type of hands, it's almost unfair. And to have them on the field together. And I think the other thing about them too is they both block well. And then if you watch Saturday, another guy, number 86, who's also 6'7", John Fitzpatrick, really good player, great blocker in the run game. So their tight end room is just stacked. And really, if you talk about like the unselfishness of this team, a guy like John Fitzpatrick has been on the roster for multiple years. Technically, this should be his year. Right, he should have been the guy splitting snaps with Darnell, and Brock Bowers is getting all that shine, right? So a lot of guys maybe would get upset about that and maybe, you know, not be all in like they are. But he's been a consummate team guy, played his role. And then you got Ladd McConkey, who did not become rated on the recruiting scale until he was offered a scholarship by Georgia. He was a zero-star recruit until he got the offer. And then he started getting – I think he ended at 3 stars or something like that by the recruiting networks. Coaching staff loves him. Good speed, good route runner. One of those kids where you can just tell was a gym rat, kind of played everything. And he's a technician, man. And I seems to have great rapport with all the quarterbacks, whether it's JT or Stetson or whoever it is, has become like a possession guy. And then you got freshman Adonai Mitchell, who broke out in the spring game, who I think they see as George Pickens' heir apparent, true freshman kid who's really had a nice year. Has had some issues, I think, with drops a little bit. We saw that again this Saturday, but also in the Tennessee game had 5 catches on 1 drive. So, you know, he has that ability to take over a drive and make some plays. So a lot of talent in that room and guys getting healthy at the right time. George Pickens had 5 or 6 snaps on Saturday against Georgia Tech. They're forecasting maybe he'll have 15 to 20 Saturday. So we'll see. Obviously not going to be 100%, but even an 85% George Pickens, probably better than most of the country, right?
Well, it's the right time of the year for him to start getting healthy, right? You know, even if it's just inconsequential contribution this Saturday, getting him back on the roster, running routes, getting back into the program, you know, come January, you know, he'll be ready to go. And that'll be a gear that Florida or that Georgia will have at that point in time that maybe you don't now. And so you could truly say this is a team that still has a lot to show that we may not even get to see Saturday. So that's compelling. That's interesting. Talk about these running backs, Zamir White and James Cook. They must be, you know, one of the best 1-2 punches in the conference.
Yeah, that was a big boost, I think, when after bowl season last year. I think when Jordan Davis and Devontae Wyatt on the D-line announced they were coming back, and then Zamir White, who Georgia fans all know as Zeus, and James Cook decided they were going to come back, it gave a lot of recall for Georgia fans of the 2017 offseason leading into the 2017 season, where you had Lorenzo Carter and Davin Bellamy announced they were coming back on the defensive side of the ball. And obviously Sony Michel and Nick Chubb coming back on the offensive side of the ball, a lot of recall to that. And that's bore itself out. You know, I mean, Georgia fan or not a Georgia fan, if you have not consumed Zamir White's story, please go and do that. Marty Smith did a fantastic segment on him. Zamir was born with a cleft lip and a cleft palate, had multiple surgeries before he was the age of 1. He had leaky kidneys. Doctors told his mother at one time he might not live. He just has a very, very compelling story. Then obviously coming out of high school, tore his ACL, gets healthy at Georgia, tears the ACL again, and has fought his way back. So if you're a college football fan, just a world-class kid and somebody to root for. And then James Cook is one of those guys who it's hard not to root for just because he's stuck around. You know, he's bided his time, never complained, consummate team guy. Obviously, older brother Dalvin having a great NFL career with the Vikings after having a great collegiate career at Florida State. And, you know, he's one of those quiet guys that just goes out and does his job, a threat, not only running the football, but great out of the backfield catching it. You know, he had the big wheel route play for the touchdown in Tuscaloosa last year, and he's continued to grow off that. I think that was actually a game or a career turning game for him, even though it was a loss for Georgia. But I think for James Cook, that game in Tuscaloosa last fall was a big jolt. I think it showed the offensive coaching staff the weapon that he is. And I think it gave him the confidence to kind of assert himself and lean into that. And he's really, really had a dynamic senior season, multiple games where he's had a receiving and a rushing touchdown. So they're great. And then you've also got in that stable of backs, Kenny McIntosh, who's a threat to catch the ball out of the backfield. And then Kendall Milton, I mean, I think he's almost like a hybrid between a Nick Chubb and a Todd Gurley. Just a big-bodied, agile, fast runner. He's just had a hard time staying healthy this season. Said he may be back healthy in time for Saturday, but I would expect even if he was, that his snaps will probably be limited. But just a loaded stable of backs in that running back room.
Yeah, I you know, we said that, Alabama fans, we said that in August and September, but we've had a run of injury. And we might be down to one running back, depending upon Brian Robinson this week. So
Good news today, though, right? Did I see that Coach Saban said Brian Robinson day to day?
Yeah, he's day to day. He's got a hamstring, right? And so those are always tricky. That he could come out and look good for the first quarter and then going into half, you know, tweak it or something. So,
yeah,
you know, so we'll see. But everything we can get out of him, we'll take. He's a hard worker. He's a fifth year guy and just a real physical back. But we've had two guys go down with knee injury in season. We had a freshman come in that never really saw the field. He had an injury in camp. And so we're starting to get really thin at the running back position. And we look at you guys and the roster there, and we think, well, that's what we had earlier in the season. Speaking of looking at the Georgia roster and liking, you know, what we see, and we talked about Kirby and recruiting and just the look of the athlete and fundamentally sound. Talk about this offensive line. Man, we juggled our line Saturday, and looks like you guys have just a real sound unit. Talk about this offensive front.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there was panic, but there was some worry coming out of week one after Clemson, because Georgia's starting right guard, who had made a ton of progress in the offseason, Tate Ratledge, out for the year after the opening game. So there was a lot of consternation about, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to shuffle this? There was talk of moving left tackle Jamari Salyer to the interior to play one of the guards, maybe moving Justin Schaefer over. They ultimately made the decision to plug in Warren Erickson, who had started the season at center, in at right guard, put in Cedric Van Pran Granger, who's out of Louisiana, I believe outside of New Orleans is where he went to high school. Really, really good player, really cerebral player, makes a lot of the calls on the offensive line, has had a really, really transcendent year this year. And then you got Justin Schaefer, who came back for his senior year. He was another big announcement. Jamari Salyer has been playing left tackle and doing fantastic. I believe this stat is still accurate. I do not think he has surrendered a sack in his time as left tackle for the Dogs. Unfortunately, he's been hampered by an injury the last few weeks, and so it's still a little bit up in the air about whether or not he's going to get to play Saturday. We're hopeful, but not sure on that yet. But Broderick Jones, a former five-star recruit, has filled in very ably at left tackle for him, has played very solid the last few weeks. And then Georgia legacy Warren McClendon has been holding it down at right tackle. I would say he has probably been, you know, if Jamari Salyer's not in the mix, Warren McClendon is probably the most undersold person on that offensive line. Right. Has had a fantastic year at right tackle. Has kind of been an anchor that you could count on. Big kid, agile. Another one of these guys just worked hard, waited for his shot, you know, and has really taken advantage of it. They've been toying a little bit with the lineup, and they'll insert this guy, Xavier Truss, in at right guard, which is crazy because he's like 6'7 or 6'8, just a big old guy. Wow. Pretty sure Xavier went to high school in Rhode Island. I think I'm right on that. I have to double check that, but I think that's right. So we'll see what they do. Sometimes if Warren struggles a little bit, Warren Erickson struggles, they'll put Xavier in. There's been, I think, a little bit of noticeable push with the interior line when he's in, but it's one of these things where if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing, right? So it'll be interesting to see. I think Alabama's front four will be their biggest test. I think the front seven for Alabama will be their biggest test yet since Clemson. I thought Clemson's defense was real. Watching them in person, they flew to the football all night, and I think this will be another test of that. So I'm interested to see how they hold up, especially in the pass game. Just because, obviously, with Will Anderson, it's going to be quite the gauntlet to get through. So that's a matchup to watch for me for sure, is the matchup on both sides of the ball with the lines.
We'll talk about let's flip the field and talk defense. I'd probably wind you up here. There's a lot to talk about on this Georgia defense. Talk about the scheme, and then maybe walk us through each of the levels. Who are some of the key players to watch?
Yeah, so I think y'all will be familiar with this, having Kirby as defensive coordinator for so long, you know, and even Coach Saban, in some ways, those schemes can be complex. And I think Kirby was his own worst enemy last year. And I think to his credit, he self-analyzed and realized that they were, I think they were asking the guys to do a lot pre-play and making a lot of checks. And they were having a lot of hot calls based on what they were seeing out of receivers and motions and all these type of things. And what they said this year was, look, we're just going to simplify things. We want to have guys have limited checks to know what they're doing and then just play free. And I mean, I think the results speak for themselves, right? They've just been electric at all three levels of that defense. I've said since the summer that between Jordan Davis at nose, N'Kobe Dean at linebacker, and Lewis Cine at safety, they would be as solid up the middle as any defense in all of America. And I've made the comparison to a baseball team where if you have an elite catcher, an elite shortstop, and an elite center fielder, you can fill the rest in and you'll be okay. And that's how I felt about this Georgia defense then. And I feel that way even more strongly now. Jordan Davis may be the most dynamic defensive player in college football just because of what he does at his size. And I think of how he affects the game. Obviously not going to be a stat sheet filler, but if you watch the kid play and watch what he allows the guys behind him to do because of the attention that he merits, just a dynamic player. And then N'Kobe Dean out of Horn Lake, Mississippi, engineering major, really smart guy. Teammates love him. High motor and never satisfied, which is what you want out of your captain, your linebacker. Yep. And then Lewis Cine just wants to hit everything that moves. So I think they all play well together. And I think, though, it goes back to what Kirby harped on, is that we just want things to be simple so they can play that way. They've stopped doing a lot of these exotic blitzes that they were trying to do. And they've really just brought four most of the year and kind of let guys play in coverage. They've played way more zone than they traditionally have. You know, Kirby always wants to play man, and they just haven't done it as much. So in turn, I don't think guys have been on an island as much. It's not to say that they're not still doing it, but I think they've taken some of the pressure off these guys and kind of let them get freed up and play a little bit. So I think that's been a massive difference between last year and this year.
I think that's compelling. You know, something that we've talked about on our podcast is simplifying the defense, and almost all season we've gone back to the Ole Miss game. We played a nickel, and we did not play a nickel, and we limited, you know, just like you said, we limited the reads. We limited. Saban likes to call, and you know, Saban, or I'm sorry, Kirby, not that different. Saban likes to call the perfect defense for every play, right? For every right. sort of alignment. And look, he's got it. He's got the perfect defense for everything that can line up. But what you lose in the shuffling of players and the rotation of assignments when there's motion, you don't get to you don't execute the perfect defense for every play, even though you've called it, because the complexities. And if you simplify, then everyone knows their responsibility. Everyone knows everyone else's responsibility. And it's going to be 80%, 88% good enough for anything. Even if it's not perfect, the guys are going to play faster, and that's going to contribute. That's going to pay off as well. And so Alabama did that against Ole Miss. We've done that a couple of other times during the season. But when we get away from that and we try to technobowl every play, that's where we tend to get in trouble. Talk about this Georgia defense, and I'm going to take notes as you explain. But where have teams seemed to have the most success? Success may be on a relative term, but where have teams had the most success going against this dog defense?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, in a lot of ways, they're historically good. I mean, they're coming off a season where they're limiting opponents to, I think, 6.7 points a game or something like that. Tennessee put up 17. That was the biggest number all year. And, you know, if you take out touchdowns scored against the second team, that number would get even lower. So this first team defense it's an animal. I mean, I think the way to attack it is to be quick and to use the short and intermediate passing game if you're able to simulate a run game. Nobody has shown that they can run the football against Georgia, which then limits your opportunity to pass off the run, which is problematic if you're an offense.
Right.
But I think you have to simulate that in some way. I think that was Kentucky's game plan. They threw to Wandale Robinson. I think Wandale Robinson had 12 catches that day, but they were for 34 yards. So I think that was their game plan. I just don't think they had the athletes to execute it. Now, Alabama will have a different level of athlete. So if I was scheming offensively against that defense, I would look to do that to bring the top down to then try and pop it.
Yeah.
I think they've been susceptible on the boundary, whether it be Keeley, not so much Darion Kendrick, but Keeley Ringo's gotten beat a couple times deep and folks have missed. Sometimes when they're in nickel, if you can match up Latavius Brenny on somebody and get a favorable matchup, he has been beaten a couple times. They've switched up their game plan though, and they've been playing a lot of Chris Smith and Dan Jackson, the former walk-on, in their nickel packages, I think, to give an extra layer of speed and a better coverage angle. Chris Smith has been injured though, so it's still up in the air about whether or not he's going to play Saturday. So that could be something to watch. But that would be my game plan, would be to come out. The other one would be Tennessee did this effectively in the first quarter, and that's to go fast. And obviously Alabama likes to go fast. Mm-hmm. So I think they should utilize that. If that's how I was scheming, that's what I would do. I would go fast. I would try to hit stuff in the 3 to 6 yard range early to try and take advantage of that underneath shell, and then take some shots in the intermediate dig game, try to hit some stuff over the top just to loosen things up. But look, that's all easier said than done, right?
Sure.
I think that's been the game plan for a lot of folks.
For a lot
of teams. This defense at all three levels is just so fast. I mean, that's the thing I think you're going to see Saturday is if you're whether you're watching on TV or whether you're watching in person at the Benz, they're just dynamically fast at all three levels. And I just think it makes it tough to find a crease, tough to pop a play. So yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't know how to beat them. I'll tell you.
That's fair. It's a tough question. A lot of teams have not had an answer for that.
Yeah. So. I do think, though, that if Alabama can get some push and establish any type of run game, they will give themselves an opportunity that nobody else has given themselves all season.
Yep.
And that's the ability to work off the run. That has essentially been a non-starter from game one. Just nobody runs the football.
Yeah.
So, and not because they don't want to. They just can't.
They can't.
And so if Alabama is able to establish that in any way, whether it's with Brian Robinson or whether it's with Trey Sanders, whoever – I think they have some interesting options, especially given their weapons on the perimeter.
Yep. Fantastic. Well, hey, let me get you out of here with an easy one. Who's your favorite dog?
Oh, man, of all time or this year?
Well, I'll take both.
Okay. All time. This is tough, man. I have a lot. You have guys you love and get attached to.
Yep.
I loved Jarvis Jones when he was there. You just talk about a guy that put his head down and went to work and pretty much won 2 cocktail parties by himself with his defensive performance. So, always loved Jarvis. He's back with the program now working for the football team. So loved him. I mean, hard not to love Todd Gurley. He's just what a dynamic player he was. I wasn't alive to see Herschel, but Todd Gurley's one of the most dynamic college football players I ever saw with my own eyes. So hard not to pick him. And, you know, this year's team, it's hard to nail one down. I will tell you, it's got to be somebody on that defensive side of the football, whether it's Jordan Davis or N'Kobe Dean. I'll tell you, one of my favorites and somebody all Alabama fans should watch and college football fans should watch is number 41, Channing Tindall. I swear, that kid, he was a big recruit out of Columbia, South Carolina. Didn't get a chance to play early because of all the depth they had in that linebacker room, which, you know, multiple guys in the pros now playing, whether it's Roquan Smith or Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy. Just a ton of talent, right? Kid could have transferred, played somewhere else, stayed at Georgia. And, I mean, just plays with his hair on fire and seems like he has a jetpack installed in the back of his shoulder pads. I mean, we have dubbed him the Falcon on our podcast. I mean, it's just as if he ignites himself and he's Sam Rogers. So, nice. I mean, he's just he's incredible. I love watching that kid play. So he's got to be up there. I don't know. This team is so hard to pick because you got so many fun stories and fun kids. So, yeah, it's a great group.
Nice. Well, I turned back a few more pages in the book, but I think some of my and I think they play together. But some of my favorite Georgia Bulldogs are Hines Ward and Garrison Hurst. I love Garrison Hurst. He was so much fun to watch.
Those are good ones, man. Garrison Hurst was a stud for sure. You know, Hines Ward is climbing his way up the coaching ladder in college now. So he's beloved at Georgia and so many good ones. David Pollack, I mean, he's another one. Great player and has obviously done well for himself. Makes his home in Athens now. He actually coaches youth teams in Athens. Very involved in the community there. And that's the beauty of it, right? Beauty of college sports that I think you don't get as much with pro teams is guys love it and they come back. And I think that's kind of the coolest part is the community of it and all those type things. So, yeah, it's great.
Fantastic. Well, Herschel, I appreciate you joining us tonight. It's a great conversation. Learn a little bit more about the Bulldogs and look forward to a big matchup on Saturday. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dave.
All right, there you go. That was Herschel with Saturday in Athens podcast, and I hope you all certainly enjoyed it. I'll tell you what, we really have our work cut out for us Saturday against the Georgia Bulldogs. If you look up and down the roster, they've got athletes everywhere. They've got a team that is really coming together. I really think Kirby Smart has put together something special this year. As Alabama fans, all the things that we want to say or think or do relative to Georgia, I hate to say it, there's something special about this team. And this team is going to be a challenge on Saturday. They will absolutely be a challenge to beat once. And if we are fortunate enough to win the game, the prospect of playing them again, that's a scary deal. Hey, but that's what we're in this for, right? Alabama wants to compete for championships, and we have to play some of the best teams. And some days they're going to get the better of us, and some days we're going to get the better of them. We want to have more of those days on top. And Saturday is going to be an interesting opportunity. I do think that we can put together a formula. I do think that we have the ingredients for a recipe for success. But we're going to need this Alabama team to perform at a level that we've not seen many times this season. And so we've talked about this team being imperfect, this team being flawed, this team and having all the skill in the world. And we need sort of that witch's brew to come together Saturday for Alabama to really have its best performance and see if we can't tame these Georgia Bulldogs. All right. If there's any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on the Facebook. Hit us up on the website at alabamafootballpodcast.com. We love and enjoy hearing everyone. And hey, if you enjoy these interviews, and we really hope you do, they're a lot of fun for us. We hope they're a lot of fun for you. And if you're listening at this sort of end of the hour, so to speak, then hopefully you really enjoy what we're doing. Go leave us a comment or drop us a question. Let us know that you enjoy the interviews and let us know that they're as much fun for you as they certainly are for us. All right. With that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.